This morning's gospel gives us one of the most dangerous parables in the entire New Testament. And all I intend to do is just unpack the parable from the beginning. I have to take out my iPhone. It's not my iPhone 10 yet. I have some notes. Okay. The parable, of course, is pretty straightforward. But the translation that we have doesn't give you the full impact of the whole parable. And when we finish, towards the end, I will tell you why I think it's one of the most dangerous parables in the New Testament. First of all, we have a man who owes his master. Originally in the Bible, in this translation, it says he owed a huge amount. Now remember, the Bible is written in Greek. And whenever you do translations, you always have to make decisions in order to make the translation understandable to your audience. And so the parable that we use here, that the Catholic Church uses, is called the New American Bible. That's the Catholic translation of the Bible. Now, if you ever decide, I get constantly questions, people saying, is this a Catholic Bible? The best Catholic Bible to buy would be the New American Bible. Now, do not mistake it for the New American Standard Bible. That is not necessarily a Catholic translation. And by the way, just as an aside, periodically I get people bringing me Bibles, and they ask, is this a Catholic Bible? And the answer is no. Yes and no and yes. Okay, why is it yes and no? Because when you have a, quote, Protestant Bible, which is really, it's just Bible, all it is an incomplete Bible that has about six Old Testament books that are missing. So the translation is perfectly, the New Testament is identical. Okay? So even if you have a, quote, Protestant Bible, it's just an incomplete Bible, which is 98% or 95% fine. You're not getting anything wrong in there. So, and the reasons for that are historical, and someday you can either look it up or I'll explain it later, but I can't do it now. So, in the New American Bible, it says this man owed a huge amount. And he gets forgiven of a huge amount. And then he goes, and there's a guy who owes him a much smaller amount. And he doesn't forgive the guy who has the much smaller amount. And he throws him into prison. Now, the very first thing that's kind of alien to us is we don't get thrown into prison because you owe money. Your credit may be in the toilet, but you don't get thrown into prison for your debts. But in the ancient world, you did. If you had a debt that you could not pay, there was no such thing as bankruptcy. You were thrown into prison. And when you were thrown into prison, they could not only throw you into prison, they could throw your whole family into prison. It was called debtor's prison. And a debtor's prison, you stayed in there and your family could stay in there until somebody else, some of your relatives came up and paid what you owed. And so the text is actually accurate in terms of the parable, the guys getting thrown into prison. But where we don't really get the picture is the amount owed, because it says a huge amount and a much less amount. Now, in the first parable, in the first part of the parable, by the way, if you want the most literal, it's not necessarily lyric translation. The Revised Standard Version, or the New Revised Standard Version of the Bible, is your best translation that you can get. Now, some of them are the Catholic. The Catholic one is the New Revised Standard Version. And just make sure that it's somewhere it says Catholic version with what's called deuterocanonical books. Those are the books that are removed from the Old Testament. But the New Revised Standard Version is your best. In that Bible, it uses the correct terminology. Now listen to this. The correct terminology is that the first guy owed 10,000 talents. Now, we don't have an idea of what a talent is. So it's important for us to understand what a talent is, and he owed 10,000. The word talent, one talent, was worth what is called, what is the smaller amount, which is denarii. It's interesting because the word denarii is where the word dinero comes from, which it comes from in Spanish. A denarii, a talent, was worth 1,000 denarii. One talent equals 1,000 denarii. Now, in order for you to get the idea, if you worked an entire day out in the fields or in anywhere, the standard wage was 1 denarii a day. 1 denarii a day. And so, one talent equals 6,000 denarii. 1 talent, 6,000. And so, if you worked an entire year with the Sabbath off and some Jewish holidays off, you could not earn 1 talent. If you worked an entire year, you could only earn 300 denarii. You would not even be quite at 1/3 of a talent. Now, the guy owes 10,000 talents. And I did the math. He owes 60 million denarii. That's what he owes. 60 million denarii. Now remember, 1 denarii per workday. The math is, if you do 60 million denarii divided by 300 work days a year in the Jewish calendar, you would have to work 200,000 years in order to pay that debt back. So imagine that this guy is cursed with living forever. And he has worked since the time of Christ until now, trying to pay that debt back. He would have paid only 2,000 denarii in those 2,000 years, and he would still have 198,000 years of work to do before he paid back the 10,000 denarii. I mean, the 10,000 talents. And so you can see that when the Bible translates a huge amount, they're talking huge. Okay? They are talking 60 million denarii, 10,000 talents. And you can't earn that. You can earn that if you work 300 days a year for 200,000 years. That's how long you would have to work. Now, the guy that he goes out and he gets this humongous debt forgiven. And then he goes out and he sees a guy who owes him, I can't forget what it said, 300 denarii, okay? Now, 300 denarii is 1 year's labor. That's all. 1 year's labor versus 200,000 years of labor. He just got forgiven, and this dude is now putting his debtor for less than a year's labor, he's putting him in prison. And that, my friends, is the problem. What is it that Jesus is trying to say? He's saying, look, when it comes down to God, the debt that you and I owe is unpayable. It's kind of like the national debt right now. What is it? $20 trillion? Okay. We're never going to pay it back. You're never going to pay it back. And so the master says, wait a minute. I just forgave you 200,000 years of work. And you couldn't forgive this dude 100 denarii or a year of work. Couldn't you do that? And of course, he has the man thrown into prison. What Jesus is saying to us, and then he ends the parable with the dangerous part. And the dangerous part, I mean, it stings, because Jesus says, so will my heavenly Father do to you unless each of you forgives his brother or sister from the heart. Now, we have to back off here. What does it mean to forgive from the heart? The problem is, Lord, the word heart. In the modern understanding, for us, the word heart means our emotions, our feelings. Okay? And so, to do something from the heart, for us, generally means with feeling. That is not the way that it was understood in the ancient world. In the ancient world, see, we, in our modern understanding, our culture is extremely sentimental. We give an exaggerated amount of weight to our feelings. People in previous ages have not done that. They did not, and you can hear it. For example, periodically I'll be listening to the news, and you'll see a reporter go up to and stick his microphone in someone's face and say, "How you feel about that?" And people talk about their feelings. Now, please understand, it's not bad to talk about your feelings. The problem is that we misunderstand and think that our feelings are the center of ourselves. That's why a lot of times when you see people talking about their feelings, they think that that's it. That's the center of who you are. Okay? And or the part that always just drives me bananas is when I hear somebody being rude, and when you call them on it, they say, "Well, I'm just being honest. I'm being honest. I'm just saying what I feel." I often want to say, this is a side, where in the scriptures or where in Jesus' teaching do you ever hear him saying, "You may be rude as long as you're honestly rude"? Where do you get that? Okay? Where do you get that it's okay for you to just bomb at your feelings on everybody? Keep them to yourself. Okay? But the problem here is this. What does it mean to forgive from the heart? In the ancient world, the heart meant the center of your decisions, the place where you decide who you are. The center of you is not your feelings. It's your decisions, your commitments, what you live by, the attitudes you choose, the person you choose to be. And so, what does it mean to forgive your brother from the heart? Whenever people offend us and you get hurt, it's normal to feel angry. Sometimes people even mistake that deep anger or resentment with hatred. Real hatred is not just anger or resentment. Real hatred is for someone. Let me give you an example. If somebody said to another person, "God damn you," and you actually meant it, not using "damn it" or something like that, but you actually meant that your decision would be to consign this person to eternal suffering apart from God, and you stuck by that decision, that is hatred. It's interesting because I did like the translation that's used on this, on the first reading. The first sentence of the first reading is really awesome. It says, "Anger and wrath are hateful things, but the sinner hugs them tight." Now, I want you to notice where the sin is. The sin is not in the anger and wrath. The sin is in hugging it tight. It's normal to be angry sometimes. There's something called justifiable anger. The problem comes when you're angry and you choose to hug the anger. You want to keep it and you don't want to let it go. You have made a choice. Sin is not in your feelings. I'm constantly having to harp on that when I hear confessions. When you say, I feel anger, I feel resentment, that's not a sin. The feeling of itself is not a sin. What are you choosing to do with the anger and resentment that you have? If you are choosing to keep it and to develop it, that's the sin. But the sin is in your choice. It's not in what you do. And I mean, it's not in how you feel. And relative to that, I get people periodically, and this happens every once in a while, not infrequently, who say to me, "Oh, Father, I didn't go to communion last week. My husband and I," this is an example, "my husband and I, or my kids and I, we got in a fight on the way to church, and I was just so feeling so horrible, I just didn't think I should go to communion." Oh, for God's sake. Go to communion. Having a fight with your husband or your wife on the way to church, you normally should have, you shouldn't be feeling, I think you were a little nuts if you were feeling wonderful when you got here. But that's not a sin. And you're saying, communion, receiving the Lord, is my reward for feeling holy. That's basically what you're saying. And if I don't feel holy, then I don't want to welcome Jesus into my heart. Imagine if any parent, if your son or daughter or any of your loved ones said, "I don't want to see you until I feel just right." Oh, come on. Nobody would say that. If you love somebody, I'll take you the way you are. You come to communion. Or the other one that I get a big kick out of is, I really feel horrible. As soon as I feel better, I'm going to go to the doctor. That's what it sounds like when you say, I'm not going to communion until I feel just right. Going to communion is part of the medicine. You're supposed to take it, especially when you feel horrible. Okay? Unless you're sitting there going, I hate him and I want to hate him. If you say that, then please don't come to communion until you get over this. Okay? You're hugging it tight. To forgive someone from the heart basically means I'm angry and I'm hurt and I'm frustrated, but I don't want to feel like this. And the best way to deal with it is to say to God, Father, I don't want to feel this way, but I don't have any control over my feelings. I would like, if you would, to remove these feelings from me, but it's when you want. Until then, give me strength to just tolerate them and to allow them to exist, but as soon as possible, take them from me. You see the difference? There's a big difference in doing that and holding it tight. And you know what I just did is basically I prayed for the other person. The moment you pray for a person that you're angry at is the moment that you hand them to God. Because praying for another person, take the person you most dislike in this world, and if you put them in prayer and say, I want to pray for this person, notice what's happening psychologically. You are saying, I put them in your hands and I want you to do for them what you want. Okay? Now, if your prayer says, send them to hell, that's not a prayer. Okay? Not a prayer. Okay? But if you pray for them, what you're actually desiring is you're desiring what God desires for them. And you're letting it go. And so forgive from the heart doesn't mean that you stop feeling. It means you choose not to hug your negative feelings tight. You hand them to God. The feelings may continue. And periodically, when something reminds you of that, you may get an explosion of those feelings. And you may be having to deal with that for a long time. It has happened to me that I've had to deal with situations for a long time. God, Jesus in this parable is not asking you to be a doormat. When Peter says 7 times and Jesus says 70 times, 7 times, he's not saying, oh, just let people dump on you constantly. You don't have to be around that person. Look, you owe a person charity or agape. You owe them to desire what God wants for them. You don't owe them to be friends. You don't owe affection. And you certainly don't owe romance. So to love your enemies doesn't mean that you lay down and say, okay, walk all over me. But it does mean that you can't desire evil for them. And you don't have to hang out with them. You don't have to like them. And if you want to minimize your time in front of them, that's fine. You don't have to do that. Okay? But you can't continue. It's like the parable of the guy who is angry at someone else, and he takes a piece of one of the coals from a fire and he holds it. And he says, as soon as this guy walks by, I'm going to throw it at him. It's burning your hand, you idiot. I mean, it's burning your hand. That's what anger does to you. Until you, when you hold on to it, it's actually hurting you. Okay? Now, why is this one of the most dangerous parables? Final thing. The Our Father. Remember the Our Father? Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. When you say the Our Father today, I hope you choke on those words. Okay? Because what you're saying is, okay, God, imitate me the way I forgive others. Forgive us as we forgive those who trespass against us. It's a moment in which should send you a little bit of a shock. Okay? So it's a parable of both beautiful parable because the amount that God has forgiven you is unbelievable. And the amount that we have to forgive of each other is much smaller. It's a parable about God's mercy, but it's also a parable making us face reality. And the reality is we have to forgive, or so will my Heavenly Father do to you if you don't forgive each other from the heart. Sobering, final thought. Thanks for listening.